In this week's episode of Pop Culture Weekly, I talk with Neil McDonough of American Horror Story and the Queen of Halloween herself, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, Cassandra Peterson. Let's go!
Welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon from iHeartRadio. Your pop culture news, views, reviews, and celebrity interviews on all the movies, TV, music, and pop culture you crave weekly. Here's Kyle McMahon.
Hello, and welcome to episode 84 of Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon. I, of course, am Kyle McMahon, and I am so glad that you are here joining me on this journey in this episode. This week, we're celebrating Halloween, my favorite holiday of all time, and we're talking to Neil McDonough, who plays an amazing role in American Horror Story Season 10 this season. It is so delicious. He is so awesome, and he's a great guy on top of being awesome. So we talked to him, and then I talked with the Mistress of the Dark, the Queen of Halloween, the hostess with the mostest. That's all I got. She's amazing. She needs no introduction. Elvira Cassandra Peterson. So, again, you know, Halloween is my favorite holiday, and I love it, and yeah. So, let's get right into speaking with Neil McDonough regarding American Horror Story. This season double feature is so good. I love it. You know, I think it was last week or the week before I talked with Leslie Grossman about her role in American Horror Story, not only double feature, because she's in both parts, but also she was in 1984, she was in Cult. She is just every single episode or every single season she's been on has been incredible. I love her. I just love her. And then I think a week or two before that, I spoke with Adina Porter for the season premiere of American Horror Story double feature, and she was amazing as well, and she's been in multiple seasons. So this is Neil's first season on American Horror Story, and who is he playing? President Dwight D. Eisenhower. So pretty big role to walk into for your debut on American Horror Story, but he absolutely kills it. Of course, Neil has been in so many things. He was Dum Dum Dugan in Captain America the First Avenger, and he actually reprised his role, fun fact, because, you know, I'm a huge Marvel Studios fan. He actually reprised that role three times in Agent Carter, the first episode of the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and in the Agent Carter television series. So he also was on Justified, Flags of Our Fathers. He was in Arrow, an crazily talented character actor. Oftentimes, I would say a villain. I'd say a lot of times he's been a villain. He's just got a great. Of course, he was in Paul Blart, too, which I absolutely love. He was Major Bennington in Sonic the Hedgehog. He's in Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, which is coming out in a couple of weeks. I mean, the guy has just been a powerhouse, and I love talking to him. So I just gave a huge introduction there, but let's get into the conversation with Neil McDonough.
All right. So, first of all, thank you so much, Neil, for joining me on iHeartRadio's Pop Culture Weekly. I am loving season 10 of American Horror Story, particularly, you know, this half season has really taken a turn with the Death Valley half of the season. You are playing President Dwight Eisenhower. You've played Jesus before. So what is it like to play these kind of iconic figures?
It's hard to put into words when you get to play someone as iconic as Dwight D. Eisenhower. And then you get to play Dwight D. Eisenhower on a show that's written by one of the most prolific writers in television history. So, you know, after 10 years of American Horror Story, they're doing something right, obviously. But when you get to play someone as amazing, what Eisenhower was he was such a straight shooter, and his choices in life were so simple, in that it was God first, me second, family first, me second. And these kind of the mantras that Reveille and I have with our kids and our family. So to play a guy that, you know, for many years I've played so many villains because, as everyone knows, I won't do sex scenes. So now that I'm in my 50s, I think I've gotten past to having to do the groping sex scenes, because who really wants to see a 50-year-old guy doing sex scenes anymore? I mean, really. So I get to finally play the heroes that I've always wanted to play. And, you know, for the last couple of years, being in these Westerns that we've produced and these other types of really kind of all-American good guys, it has been fantastic, a fantastic treat for me. But to play Eisenhower was different. To play, you know, one of the most iconic guys in the history of America, who was so gung-ho America, and who also loved his wife so much that, you know, one of my favorite scenes was in last week's episode when Sarah Paulson, who, by the way, what an actor, you know, what an executive producer, what energy, what talent, you know, it was just an honor and a blessing to be with her, you know, on screen. We mixed it up and we had, you know, a blast really delving into these characters. But to play Eisenhower, who is so similar to me, you know, I don't watch a lot of my stuff, you know, and by watching Eisenhower now, it takes me away, because, you know, playing so many villains, I generally don't recognize myself playing the villains because it's so over the top at times and fun, but right. Awesome and blessed to be able to do it. But to play someone who's so close to me, you know, I generally didn't recognize myself at first, because I'm really playing myself in the situation, because he loved his wife so much that every decision that he made was, you know, Mamie was right there. And the one scene that we did in episode 9, where she's floating across as the alien, says, "Sign the paper." "No, I'm not going to sign the paper. Sign the paper. I'm not going to sign the paper." And then all of a sudden she manifests out of it and the blood starts coming through her eyes. And of course I'm going to sign it because I love my wife so much. And I kept my choices so simple as Neil McDonough playing Eisenhower, that what would happen if the situation arose that this were Reveille inside this, you know, this thing. So you see Eisenhower where you think that he would be just getting angry. Instead, he gets emotional, and you see emotional come, because I just tap into what if with Reveille, and these things just pop out of me. And I kept my choices really simple as Eisenhower in these crazy elaborate situations of aliens. And I think that's what really made Eisenhower pop truthfully on the screen, because it's reaction to these situations without tipping your hand and without being scared, have to be in emotion. No, you have to be in the situation. And truthfully, what's the best way to be in the situation? And that's, you know, the simple choices. And Eisenhower was that.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, in around all of these crazy monsters, whether they be aliens or other, you know, characters in this show, he's human, you know? And
that's exactly
you would expect him to be presidential and, you know, but the human comes out of him and says, "Whoa, this is my wife. This is my life and my wife and my love." The human comes out of him. And I love that.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think it's, you know, really, I played, you know, Ike as truly like a love story throughout this whole thing. You know, pretending I'm talking to Reveille the whole time, you know, in the scene next week, I won't tell you what happens, but there's a scene where, you know, I'm literally the whole time thinking about Reveille and what happens there. And you'll see it's a really amazing, fantastic, moment, you know, on screen for myself, because it was, you know, it was just a great situation. I can't tip my hand as to what happened.
I'm sorry,
but it was an honor, you know, just to tell the words of Ryan Murphy, to be invited to be on a show like American Horror Story by Ryan Murphy and Brad Fulchek and the whole crew was such an honor. I still haven't met Ryan. And when I meet him, I'm going to give him the biggest hug and say, "Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to play not just one of the most iconic guys of all time, but to get to play opposite the actors I did." And I got to tell you a little something. There's this little actor on the show. His name's Craig Sheffer, who played Nixon. Everyone knows Craig. But he took 8 years off to be with his family because of personal things. And he comes out swinging like crazy. I mean, he's just sweating profusely. You know, the way he played Nixon, the way and you know, for him to play that presidential, all he wanted to be is president, you know, and then have LBJ and then have JFK and all these guys, where Eisenhower didn't necessarily ever want to be president. He just always wanted to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do the right thing for his country. He wanted to do the right thing for God, as being such a Christian guy, and being me being such a devout Catholic myself. He wanted to always be doing the right things. And as a dad of five and as a husband to an amazing wife, that's kind of who I am and what I like to do. So to be able to play Eisenhower and put myself and infuse me into those 1954 suits and those glasses on screen, it was such a joy for me. And I can't tell you how much I owe to Ryan Murphy to give me that opportunity.
And it's a joy as a viewer as well. You know, I was talking to Leslie last week about American Horror Story, and every year it's, you know, every season it's something brand new that keeps us as viewers on the edge of our seat, ready to dig in, waiting for that next episode. Is that how it was for you as an actor reading the script?
Okay, Kyle, literally, like I'd get a script and I'd start giggling. I said, oh my gosh, these situations are incredible. Boy, Ike has a lot to do today. And as an actor, you know, the more you give me, the happier I am, you know, because I love playing. I love acting. You know, my favorite thing other than, you know, God and family for me is acting. It's a deep third behind those top two things, but it's something that I love to do. And I think I love acting more today than I did yesterday. And when I get to play characters like Eisenhower, it made me fall in love with acting even more and more and more, because I got to be in these amazing situations with these amazing actors for this amazing writer on this amazing network. And, you know, thank you FX and thank you Hulu for letting me, for entrusting, you know, me with the part of Eisenhower, because, you know, every day I'd get to set and I would have these amazing lines and these incredible situations. And I'm just, you know, I'm still, Hervé just said, is that your Emmy speech? Maybe.
There you go. We get a little preview.
It's about time. Come on. Let's go.
It is.
No. I don't do any. No. That's not me. You know, the celebrity part of this stuff, you know, Hervé says, you're just famous enough. Don't mess it up. And, you know, I get to play all these amazing characters and all these shows and everyone knows my face, but there isn't a camera shoved in my nose, you know, everywhere I go. That might change because of Eisenhower, who knows, but I'm blessed. I'm the most blessed guy that I know. I get to have this incredible wife, kids, and this career. And it's just, I'm blessed and honored and humbled.
So as you know, we, the American Horror Story fans, and I'm a huge AHS fan, we enjoy that so many of these actors return in different capacities every, you know, season or every few seasons or whatever. Could Eisenhower be the start of you being in the AHS universe in the future?
I hope so. Look, I got to, you know, the words that they give you on this show, you know, their writing room it's incredible. You know, a lot of times you'll do TV shows and I'm not sure I'd say that. There wasn't even an iota of that with Eisenhower. Every word they gave me, I was like, wow, I get to say that. This is awesome. I get to mix it up with these actors and get to play with, you know, the creme de la creme of Hollywood. And it was, you know, from Carl playing LBJ to, you know, Cody killing it up as Valiant Thor, you know, everyone in this thing, from the grips to craft service, everyone's in it on American Horror Story, literally to win it. That's because the tone that's set by Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk, that we want to do the best. We want to crank it up. And years ago when I was doing Band of Brothers, Tom Hanks said, you owe it to the men of Easy Company to tell the truth. And that never left my mind. And for me to play Eisenhower, I owe it to the, you know, not just the Eisenhower family, but to America, to make sure that I'm telling the truth with Dwight D. Eisenhower on every step that I take. And, you know, I take a lot of pride in my acting, but this one was a little different. This one was, you know, I got to play Ike. So I needed to make sure that I was telling the truth and working my butt off, because I never like letting anybody down, especially in this situation.
Neil, thank you so much for speaking with me. You are awesome. I am loving you as Ike, and I can't wait until the finale next week. Thank you.
Hold on, one last thing to one of my favorite people in Hollywood, my sister, whom I love so much.
Hey, Foxy. Love you, Foxy. Hey, Foxy. Thank you. Thank Kyle, you so much, Leo.
Thank you very much. God bless you guys.
All right. Neil's an awesome guy, isn't he? He's just down to earth, super talented, very, very just good guy. And I love talking to him, and I love his role as President Dwight D. Eisenhower on American Horror Story. And also a couple of other fun facts, because you know I'm a huge The X-Files fan. He played Agent Comer in two episodes of The X-Files. I believe, and I'm sure you guys will send me hate mail if I'm incorrect, but I believe it was season 9. I believe it was the final season of the original run of The X-Files. He also was just in a little show called Marvel Studios What If? And of course he plays Timothy Dum-Dum Dugan. And that episode is called What If Captain Carter Were the First Avenger? So he has now played that character, Dum-Dum Dugan, four times, I think, officially in the MCU universe. So that's pretty cool. In any event, let's continue on with our next guest, who needs no introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, creator, writer, producer, author, scarer, haunter, seducer, Cassandra Peterson. All right. So I am here with the legendary, the creator, author, director, writer, producer, singer, songwriter, everything, Cassandra Peterson. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Cassandra. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Kyle. I'm happy to be here.
So we talked last year for a little bit, and in the prior year, you have had another Hallmark year. Besides celebrating your 40th anniversary as Elvira, you released a best-selling book.
I did. It's on the New York Times bestseller list.
How awesome is that? And that's called Yours Cruelly, Elvira. We're going to talk about that. But you also had some special projects that are airing right now that I'm so in love with as well. So let's get into the book first, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay. So this is, first of all, I absolutely love the book. And it is, besides entertaining as always, it's also heartfelt. You go, you know, really give some stories that that show why Cassandra is as successful as she is, but also what has led you to that success. And wow, what a story it is, right? So why was it important to you now to tell your story?
Well, I've been meaning to tell my story for like decades, but I honestly haven't ever gotten the time. Writing a book takes a big chunk of time, man, you know, and I never really, I'd go off to like Hawaii as an excuse to write for a month, and then I'd go off to somewhere else and say I'm going to write for a month, and that just kept going on for about 15 years until I finally, a friend of mine, Pamela DeBar, who wrote I'm With the Band, said to me, honey, until you get an agent and you get a book deal, you will never write this. You have to have a deadline, or you won't do it. And she was 100% right. And she turned me on to her agent, and he wanted to sell a book, and we got a deal with a publisher. And then I had a deadline, and I had to sit my ass down and do the work. And so that's how you write that. But it's like a wanting to do it, but it doesn't really cut it.
Well, and do what you did. I mean, it is incredible, and its success is well deserved. And you really, you know, you don't hold back much, I would say.
I don't think anything. If there's more, well, there is a little more, but I'll save that for the next book.
There you go. You know, you've had such a fascinating life, and it always hasn't been, you know, all sparkly and shiny and successful. How did you, you know, channel those things? For instance, you know, you had a sort of an accident that you thought could very negatively affect your life forever, and it kind of turned into a good thing. How did you channel all that? You know, was it happenstance? Were you consciously thinking, you know, I'm going to turn this these trials and tribulations into positives?
It was kind of conscious. I got burned as a child when I was only 18 months old. I got burned with third degree burns over 35% of my body, and I was teased and bullied and made fun of by other kids in school. You know how they do, and it made me withdraw a lot, and I became very kind of standoffish and shy. And then somewhere around my teen years, I don't know what happened. I went the other way. I went the opposite way. I decided to show off all the good skin I had left. And I don't know. I went a little wild and crazy, but it did actually. Now at this age, I look back and I say, if it hadn't been for having to overcome this big barrier, I think I would have just, I'd probably still be in Colorado Springs, you know, working at a restaurant. I don't know. I had this need to overcome that. And so many people, including my mom, told me I would never be good enough or pretty enough or any of that. And I kind of went the direction of, I'll show you. And some people, unfortunately, I think my sisters both kind of caved to that, you know, caved to the negative, you can't do this, you can't do that. And yeah, oh dear God, my phone's on. Sorry.
You're fine.
I kind of caved to that. And and they ended up not doing very well. They both became drug addicts and alcoholics, and they both passed away. So I don't know. It was it became a challenge for me, I guess. Oh my God.
Well, it is the season, right?
Yes. Thank you. Oh my God. I wish my assistant was here to pick it up. Let's see. Okay.
So from that, I mean, you have built, you know, going all the way back, you know, there was an issue legally. First of all, you started out touring and as a go-go dancer and then doing a tour overseas. I'm covering a lot of ground here in a sentence. Right. And of course, they will read yours cruelly, Elvira by Cassandra Peterson to get all the juicy details in between. But
a lot of that. There's sex. Violence, nudity, everything.
Everything you want in a book. I love it. And one of the things that I think is so amazing is that Elvira, the character, kind of happened by circumstance in where, you know, there was this vampira who, you know, something happened legally where at the very last minute she decided she didn't want you to be the daughter, and they kind of put names in a can and out came Elvira, which you had originally conceived as a kind of redheaded girl in like a tattered dress or something, right?
Yeah. No, I wanted to wear my own hair when I heard I was going to be a horror host. I didn't really know what a horror host was. I mean, where I grew up, we didn't have horror hosts. We were too poor to have one. And so I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. I just knew that I loved horror movies, especially the old kind of cheesy ones. And I thought, oh, this is a fantastic gig for me. I love wearing costumes. I love horror movies. This is awesome. But my choice was to go with something a little different, not the typical old, you know, Morticia Adams vampire look. I wanted to, you know, jazz it up. And I wanted to have my own hair, you know, too. I didn't want to wear a wig. But the station said, no, you have to have black hair. You have to wear it black. And then my best friend at the time, Robert Redding, and I sat down and spitballed about it and came up with this look that was kind of more, a little 80s edgy, you know, it kind of, the punk era was kind of going on then. So we kind of put little leather and studs, a little heavy metal punk, I don't know, everything into it. And so we tried to make it a little more modern looking than the old same old thing, you know?
Yeah. And what's interesting about that to me is that you know, is now an iconic look that is sort of timeless in so many ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope so. I guess they're still selling Elvira costumes out there every year. So people still like it. So yes, it was a good choice. I mean, even though I didn't want to go that direction, in the end, I'm glad I did.
Me too. And I think millions of other people are as well. So did you think as you were starting this and, you know, a local television studio that Elvira, when did it dawn on you that, okay, this is bigger than what I originally thought this job was going to be? When did that hit you?
Yeah, I had a couple little clues along the way. For one, I was still working as a temporary secretary. So I was working at some insurance company, and I remembered saying to the insurance dude there, I can't work on Thursdays anymore because I just got a TV show. And he was like, wow, really? Which one? And I said, I play this character, Elvira. I thought nobody in the world had ever heard of it or seen it. I swear this guy almost crapped his pants. He really did. He started giggling and screaming and jumping up and down. And all of a sudden I was like, whoa, somebody knows this show and they've seen it? You're kidding. And also, I had my phone number in the phone book. Brilliant. Well, back then, that's what you did. You know, everybody put their phone number in the phone book. And I started getting calls like 24 hours a day, nonstop, asking me all kinds of obscene questions, but also about, can I appear at this haunted house or this venue or blah, blah, blah. And then I knew, holy crap, this thing is taking off. Then suddenly I got invited on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, which honestly was the only talk show out there at the time. And you knew if you were invited on that show, you were famous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a big, big deal. So all of a sudden, this little job that I was just looking at as like, $350 a week, and this would be cool. It'll probably last a couple months at least. Is now 40 years old.
Yeah. And worldwide, and, you know, and has transcended decades and platforms and, you know, different types of media. It's absolutely incredible. And Elvira stands, I mean, it's like Santa and Christmas, you know, Elvira and Halloween.
Yeah, I do think of it that way. People go, what do you owe your longevity to? And I say, well, you know, there might be a lot of things, but I think the biggest thing is that I'm really tied to a holiday, you know, Halloween. And it's funny, when I wrote the book, I go back and I sort of see how the whole thing played out. And my mom and my aunt owned a costume shop, and I was so into Halloween as a kid and a teenager, you wouldn't believe it. It was a big time of year for my family. It's when all of my relatives came from all these other states and helped my mom and my aunt work at this costume shop. And after school every day, I would be stuffing little, you know, tiger tails with foam and sewing bat wings, you know. So it was always, it was the time of the year. And strangely, it ends up that way still for me 100 years later, you know.
And so with the film, first of all, I mean, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark is another iconic, you know, cult classic that is required annual viewing in my home and many other around the world. You followed that up with a second film. And I was wondering, you know, there's been a gap now. You had talked about potentially doing an animated film. Can we expect another Elvira film?
You know, I don't know. I change my mind every day. I did write another very detailed treatment for a movie that really picks up exactly where Mistress of the Dark left off in Vegas. And I've like had it with Vegas, and I'm like, where am I going to go next? So I did write this treatment. It would be fun to do. I don't know if there's enough CGI in the world to make me look the same as I did back then, but I don't know. There are other projects I'm working on. One, which I've just started working on now, is documentary of my life.
Awesome.
And of course, the book would be kind of the blueprint of that. So that's one project. I'm also hoping there'll be a biopic, you know, with somebody else playing me.
Who would you want to play you?
Well, Dolly Parton. No. Whoever plays me has to have certain attributes, you know.
Two in particular.
Yes, two in particular.
Brains and talent.
Talent. the third thing I've dreamed up for a long time, and that is bringing Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, the movie, to Broadway and stage it as a play, a musical, kind of like Rocky Horror meets Hairspray, you know?
That would be amazing.
It would be a freaking awesome, awesome show. I know I'd go see it.
I would go see it as well. I love all of this, and I can't wait till it happens, and you're manifesting it now. And there's some other cool things that you have going on right now besides your New York Times best-selling book, Yours Cruelly. And I love this. So you partnered with Netflix on these Sunday night drops. How did that come about?
It was fantastic. Netflix just called me out of the blue and asked if I would host a whole month of horror movies. And on it, I'm Dr. Elvira. And so, I'm so glad to finally become a doctor. My mother would be so happy. And I tell people, I explain, and this is true. This is actually true if you look it up, that horror movies actually help you to anti-stress. It's so crazy. Because you get this giant rush of serotonin and dopamine and everything during the movie because you're scared. And then when it's over, it all kind of lets down and you get this kind of high almost, you know, it's like riding a roller coaster. You're scared to death. And then all of a sudden it's done and you're like, oh my God, I feel so great now, you know?
Absolutely.
So anyway, yeah, they came to me and did it. And it was so fantastic. I was really happy to be a part of it.
I love besides the pieces themselves, I love how it's filmed. As I was watching, I was like, I feel like this is what an Elvira hosting show would be today. If it was done today, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the way we did it was on a soundstage between the 12 o'clock news and the 5 o'clock news. And it was just this soundstage with a black scrim, couple of old candelabras on my couch, you know, because they couldn't afford any budget. But I think that kind of, added to the charm of the show, because everybody thinks it's filmed in a basement somewhere in their town, you know.
Right.
They can't imagine that anything that crappy looking could possibly be from Hollywood. So, but I did love that set that the Netflix did. It was actually not a set. It was an old house in Altadena here in California. And there was only one bummer about that day, and that was that it was 102 in the house, and I was sitting in front of a roaring fire. I looked like Rudy Giuliani. Let me tell you, I had black eye makeup going. I looked, it was a cross between Giuliani and Alice Cooper, man. Oh, it was brutal, brutal. I didn't think I'd get through it without passing out.
Yeah, that does really sound brutal. But your entire life, you persevered and delivered the goods.
Thank you. I barely made it out there with my life.
You also did something with Hulu, which I think is awesome as well. Could you talk a little bit about that?
You mean the Hulu show I had, or the Shudder show I had recently?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, Shudder. I did do a show for Hulu, but that was a couple of years ago. And my nose keeps itching. I think it's allergies today. I just did this Shudder special. It's called Elvira's 40th Anniversary, very special. I don't know what it's called, but you can stream it online now if you go to Shudder.com. And it was really fun. I got to host four of my favorite movies, one being Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, of course, best movie ever made, and two being my favorite movie of all time, a horror movie, and that was House on Haunted Hill, mm-hmm. starring Vincent Price. And that was that was the first movie I saw as a kid, and it changed my whole life. I mean, it really did. I was suddenly just this horror freak from then on. So that movie, and then a couple of other really kind of wacky, cheesy movies, but they're all really fun, and I got to do what I love doing best, hosting them, and we did it on a little bigger budget than I used to have. So we had like skeleton driving a car and stuff like that.
I absolutely loved it. And when worked with Shudder numerous times, and they're such great people, and it's such a great channel. I don't have cable. I've never had cable since I moved out of my parents last month. And I'm just kidding. But I've never had cable. And one of the first things that I subscribed to was Shudder. And they just have such great content. And every horror fan should be subscribing to it.
Yeah, they do. And I love that they have Sven Gulli and Joe Bob Briggs
yes,
on there.
Yes.
I love seeing those.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, it seems like for me, that's like the perfect place for you to maybe do, you know, maybe an annual special or I would love it every single week, but something further with them, you know, as a horror host.
Yeah, I would love to. You never know. We'll see. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I've got these other projects I'm yes. sort of starting to work on, so... that would be nice. We'll see. I have a lot of stuff coming up. So I can't, you know, I keep saying I'm going to retire and it just does not happen. I don't know. What's up with that?
Well, I will say that actually was one of the things that I was going to ask you. There were rumors with this book when it came out that I think you had kind of mentioned in an interview or something about retirement. And then everybody was like, no, Elvira's going to retire. Obviously, of course, you can and you have more than earned it, but please don't. Please.
You know, I think what's going to happen is I'm going to retire doing the character and dressing up in costume. And then I'm going to just keep doing these other projects, you know.
Yeah.
More as putting them together, writing them and producing them. So I think that's kind of how that's going to go. But I don't know. Then all of a sudden I see Jane Fonda on TV in her TV show, you know, Grace and Frankie, and she's 82. And I'm like, okay, I know I said I was going to retire when I was 40, then 50, then 60, then 70. Who knows? Might be doing this when I'm 100 years old. They'll stuff me. Maybe when I'm dead, I'll still be doing it. My manager has already threatened to stuff me and have a mechanical arm that just signs autographs.
I hope you do it, you know, as long as it makes you happy. I hope you do it until, you know, the day you die. And it's just you have created such a body of work. And I mean this both metaphorically and literally. But it's just, you know, people can only dream of, you know, creating a character that stands the test of times, generations, you know, all kinds of media. It's just, and
it's pretty miraculous. I mean, there's maybe only me and Pee-wee. He always says that we're members of the most exclusive club in the world, you know, and it's people who have a character that has endured over decades. And they own the rights to the characters. So nobody tells them how to do it or what to do. They do it, you know, themselves.
And
so.
And that is why you are the queen bee. Cassandra, thank you so, so, so much for speaking with me. I've really enjoyed it. And please, for every single project you ever do, you are always welcome on my show, Pop Culture Weekly on iHeartRadio. I can't wait for everybody to see the upcoming projects, and we will have all the links and everything to the book. And of course, the Funko, there's a new Funko Pop that I am obsessed with.
My 40th anniversary.
Absolutely. Yes. And I actually just got a real living doll of you.
Yeah. Living dead doll.
Living dead doll. That makes much more sense.
I know. I wanted to be one of those for so many years. I gave my daughter the whole collection of them when they came out, and I thought, something mommy's going to be one of these. And she was like, what? Anyway, finally, I am one. And yeah, and I just got a new Elvira Vespa and a new collector's pinball, brand new one that came out today.
Awesome. Well, we will have everything where people can, we will have all the links up so everybody can get everything because they will want it because it's Elvira.
Thank you. I hope so. Thank you so much, Kyle. This was super fun.
Thank you. Thank you, Cassandra. Happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween and unpleasant dreams.
How can you not love her? Especially, you know, me as a fan of Halloween. I mean, I've grown up with her as, you know, the icon for Halloween. She's like, you know, Santa for Christmas, but she's like the Santa for Halloween. A much, much curvier Santa. You've got to pick up her book, Yours Cruelly, Elvira, Memoirs of the Mistress of the Dark. It is seriously a page turner. I finished it in like 2 days because it was so good. And it's just a revelation of how she built an empire, you know, from kind of a struggling actress that didn't come from much, difficult relationship with her mom, and became this, you know, this icon. So pick it up. Yours Cruelly, Elvira, Memoirs of the Mistress of the Dark. Such a good book, and I absolutely love it. Link to get it is in the show notes. All right, that is our episode for this week. I hope you all have a very happy and safe Halloween. You know I will be having an amazing Halloween, and I will see you next week. I love you. Please keep subscribing and reviewing. We need the reviews. Please continue to review on Apple Podcasts. It continues to grow the show. I'm asking you to do it if you haven't yet. I appreciate it. I love you. We out.
Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Weekly. Hear all the latest at popcultureweekly.com.
Creepy Kyle signing out. Unpleasant dreams.